The views expressed in this interview are those of the individuals and do not reflect the official policy or position of the U.S. government, the Department of Defense, the U.S. Navy, or the Naval Postgraduate School. Welcome to the Trident Room, brewer of stout conversation, unfiltered and on tap.
On today's episode, hosts Elena Youngblood and Colleen Wilmington sit down with NPS's Dean of Students to talk about his leadership takes, his career and academic advice, and his plans and goals for his term here at NPS.
Part two of a two-part series.
Welcome back. I'm Commander Elena Youngblood, and I'm here with Lieutenant Commander Colleen Wilmington, and we are hosts for the Trident Room podcast. And today, we are getting to interview Naval Postgraduate Dean of Students, Captain Eric Skowski.
As part of your role as dean and overseeing the different departments, you mentioned already advocating for better communication. How do you ensure, I guess, looking at your first 100 days, how do you see those different departments contributing to the quality expected from an NPS degree?
Great question. One that I can't completely answer. I will say that I have better relationships with some departments than others. And largely that's a failure on my part to get out of the office and go meet them. So I know the Chief of Staff, Commander Andrew Seneceros, who relieved me in Advanced Training Command back, I think 2008, so we go way back. He's got a great initiative where he, the Provost, and the President are going to get out to all of the departments on a monthly basis, more than just a flyby, but to sit down and really understand what their issues are. So I am going to invite myself to that, but I don't really want to wait 12 months to meet everybody. But I will participate there. But I guess back to your question, I haven't engaged to the degree that I need to be as effective as I can. And I have one observation from what I have seen in 100 days is that we need to be a little bit more mentally flexible and departmentally flexible in doing interdisciplinary research, project, and thesis work. Each department does things a little bit differently, and some departments work better with others or have more things in common where research can overlap. I would like to see during my handful of years here that we break down those barriers to interdisciplinary research at work, because it's supposed to be happening. It says so in our mission statement. I think that we need to be held accountable for the vision and mission, and right now we could be doing better. So as I do meet with the departments, I'll be asking what they're doing on how they're reaching out to other departments and being more willing to come to a yes than to say, no, we can't do that because we need to find a way to do what's being asked of us.
Thank you. In the past, you've mentioned that you've worked with partner nations to elevate efforts. How can the international graduate program here on campus tie into those initiatives?
Well, it's already, I would say, baked in. I think the international students come here knowing that they're going to have that opportunity. And stop me if I'm not answering the question correctly. I think it is really more incumbent on the American students to support and participate in the IGPO, International Graduate Program Office events. And there are many who do, such that it's taken me several months before I got on the Yosemite trip. There's all these neat things that you're going to go as an international student sponsor and spend a day or three and build relationships that otherwise, if you weren't all here at the same campus at the same time, would likely not happen. So I guess I'm answering the question my own way. I would say that we all need to take advantage and leverage the opportunity here to build the relationships, because you're going to, one, build lifelong friendships. And from an operational perspective, you never know when those relationships are going to come to the rescue down the road when you're a commander, a captain, colonel, or even a flag. You just can't predict these types of things. So I really, really support and appreciate the international student body presence here. And I hope that after maybe perhaps hearing this podcast that others will try to get involved.
To speak towards that, I've had the opportunity to sponsor two students, one from Estonia and one from Germany, in completely different programs. And it's a family thing. My daughters are learning German and we are spending birthdays together. And it's really just an add-on to the cohort that we already had here. But it's a really neat experience.
And to highlight that, I actually just sat down with Dino, who is the head of our international student department. And we've done a podcast where he talks about all of the fantastic things that, one, he has done, and two, that the department does here on campus, and highlights some of those efforts that you just talked about, sir. So listeners, if you would like, please go over and listen to that episode. And a lot of these really cool opportunities are laid out there. So
do you think there's any interest in sending NPS students abroad in a similar program? program?
I think so. It's worth, and I have already started socializing this a bit. I don't know if it would be at a quarter at a time, or in the case of our Kraken students, they went, I want to say, for 2 weeks to Naples, Italy. While they weren't at an international academic institution, they did go abroad, which was the result of their good research and high student performance. So I am looking at ways to incentivize and create those experiences, but I'd say that we're still in the infant stages of what that could look like. So always looking to get to yes, but obviously it comes down to funding oftentimes. So if any of our listeners have some ideas, and I know that NJOC has been looking at that, and I think there's something waiting for me in my inbox to read, that I've asked them to do a survey. So Jason Mariscal and others have done that for me, and I'll read those, and hopefully there's something in there about just that.
Since you brought up giving insight, what would be the best way to do that? Would it just stop by your office, shoot you an email? Do you have an anonymous Dropbox somewhere on campus?
Absolutely. So there is a DOS suggestion box. It just doesn't have to be for when things are wrong or students are diming at each other for not wearing the right uniform. You can talk to me that way, or you can send me a note. I'm going to tell you that I am buried in Nipper. So if you're going to send me a note that you want to make sure that I see, putting my executive assistant, Mr. Christopher Browning, who's phenomenal, on that note, he'll make sure that I see it in action right away.
Speaking of support with your Nipper burial, students often rely on support available over at the Defense Language Institute down the street. By that, we mean the medical, a bunch of other things down there. What amenities would you like to see either established or brought back to the MPS campus?
Well, I'll tell you, I've been to both medical and dental over at Palm, Presidio of Monterey. They're really good, and we have direct representatives that work the desks, but I didn't know that we used to have dental upstairs. That would be...
Yes, we did, and they had the best view from their chair. If you got into the dental chair, you just had the view of the bay. It was fantastic.
See, more people would go to dental if we could get that back. That would be really nice, and I'm not running for student body president right now when I say this, but we do need a coffee shop or a Starbucks or something like that back on campus. And I know that it's in the works. And that's one of my biggest, I guess, DOS suggestions, is that out of my hands, but being worked. So, and what that used to do before my time was create that environment for a sense of community. People could go, if we even had a cafeteria, because that's where all the business gets done and all the discussions take place between classes. So we need some place where there's a sense of community. I will foot stomp the efforts of the NPS Foundation that have invested in our student lounge right in the Dudley Knox Library. That is a place, if our listeners don't know about, that they could go. It's stocked with coffee and other things, furniture. Religious services would be the other thing. Now, some people satisfy their faith needs out in town or otherwise, but I know we have a base chapel, and I don't understand everything behind why that's not open. And I haven't heard anybody bring that up, but that's just an observation. Perhaps if we had services, convenient services on base, that'd be neat.
Very interesting. I'm not even a coffee drinker, but if I needed I'll call it an emergency chai tea. It was great having that on campus during finals week.
And even though they closed like normal Starbucks at 2 o'clock, there was a really interesting dynamic for a long time, because we used to have the Love Shack on campus, which was here for a long time. And Major Sarah Dixon actually did an interview with Chef Loveday, previous graduates. I know I told a couple of them, like, oh, I'm going to NPS. I'm like, you have to go to the Love Shack. They have the best burritos. And I was like, oh. So
it was the Love Shack. It is now the Love Chalet. I guess it's what was there before. It's now the cafe.
You walk through the quad, all that's left of the Love Shack, there's a rock that says, like, the Love Shack was here. And a lot of new students don't know what it means, because it was torn down like so quickly. But it was like, you had the food there, you had Starbucks, and you just kind of hung out at the quad. And so it was actually really funny. There were a couple new students. We were told to look for the Love Shack. I'm like, yeah, it's not there anymore. It's the cafe.
Now it's like the water hammer. You got to go look for the water hammer. You got to go look CG 111.
You sure you're not a SWO?
I was a prior SWO.
Okay.
I'm a recovering SWO.
Okay.
I was surface.
No wonder you knew that one.
Surface warfare. Yeah, I fell prey. I was a surface warfare officer on the USS Dedham from 2009 to 2011.
Well, I'm just going to say thanks for your service.
Oh, thank you.
That's great.
Yeah, you as well. Sir, what words of wisdom would you give to anyone considering pursuit of higher education at MPS?
First of all, I'm biased. So you have options. You've got all the service colleges. You have Naval War College. You've got Marine Corps Command and Staff, but how many of those reside here in Monterey? And also, our curriculum is different. I won't go through all of that, but it's very available for those interested. But I would highly encourage somebody to consider coming here. I won't soapbox too much, but I'll just say that I tried to come here as a young lieutenant many years ago, but my community couldn't figure out that investing in LDOs and enlisted people would make future critical thinkers. So now I'm so encouraged that I see petty officers, I see chiefs and gunnies and master guns coming here. I think it's so great that we finally have warrant officers and enlisted doing the same thing and competing. Because you don't have to wear the rank of an officer to be an intellectual person or academically inclined. So I would say it gives an opportunity where others may not exist, and you can kind of choose your own adventure. I mean, there's tons of academic programs to choose from. If you can't get here, there's certificates. Take advantage of it. I've only had a handful of classes so far, but I'm so excited at what I'm learning. You never stop learning. Again, I'm biased. But I would say if you're thinking about it, express your interest early to your detailer so that you can get on the waiting list.
And then what guidance would you give for those that have made it and they're already here?
Okay, this applies to me too. I'm not getting out on as many trails as I should be. I haven't done any bike rides with the cycling club yet, and I have no excuse. All my bikes are here. But I would say join a few clubs, sign up for some IGPO events.
Trident Room Podcast Club, just a plug. Shameless plug.
Shameless plug. You should join the Trident Room Podcast Club. But there's so many neat clubs, and a lot of them are subsidized too. You're going to do things that you couldn't do. And I'll just use an example. I didn't know back when I was younger and more athletically inclined, I was the team captain for the SEAL mountain bike team. And we did that mostly for recruiting. But Sea Otter Classic is just up the road here. And I didn't realize at the time, but now Admiral Mark Schaefer, our Special Operations Command South Commander, he was here as a Lieutenant Commander, and they forced him to stand up the cycling team, I heard. And so I didn't know, but I was told to go to Monterey and go find my booth space that's been provided for me at Sea Otter Classic. So I brought the Naval Special Warfare Recruiting Tent. I sat it up. I had all my flyers. And I manned the booth while waiting for my race. And then some older fellow came by, and it dawned on me that I should be polite, respectful, and listen to what he had to say. In hindsight, I realized that is probably the person that paid for our booth to be there. And the name escapes me right now, but people know that. But I didn't realize that this didn't happen by magic. That was some benevolent donor associated with the foundation that made that experience and opportunity possible. So I know that to do some of the very expensive things, like I haven't golfed here, but imagine trying to pay for golfing here. Being part of the club allows you to experience things that you otherwise maybe couldn't get your foot in the door or maybe wouldn't want to afford. So I would say take advantage of the clubs.
And I will also say on top of that when I was here before for my master's degree, you had to pay a fee in order to be a club member. It was $50, and it was like for the whole year. So it was kind of very, very small impact fee, but that has actually now been completely taken care of. So it's free to join these clubs and take advantage of all the benefits that you're talking about. So please do that.
Absolutely. It doesn't cost you anything except signing up, and nobody hounds you. And you may not realize what you want to do until you go see what's available to you. And then on the academic side, taking advantage of the opportunity here, that's going to be a personal choice. Some people can handle more pain than others. I would love to take more classes, but I have to do my job as dean. But those that can't afford to maybe add a certificate on top of their classes, once you've done your JPME and all of those things, if you've got bandwidth left, go for it.
Which I actually just saw the announcement that Meyer Scholars can add an AQD to their records now. I thought that was amazing, really highlighting a lot of the rigorous studies that they do through that program.
I'm sure it's more than just John Hammerer, but he's done a great job. He's super committed, and there's many like him on campus. We need to celebrate those individuals.
Lastly, sir, in January, you announced the partnership between MPS and NVIDIA to provide with access to cutting-edge technology and expertise and foster an environment of growth and learning, quote. Is there a hierarchy of projects for that?
I don't know. I'm not as involved as I would like to be. I do know that the partnership is strategic is the wrong word, but fortuitous is probably more appropriate. It's just fantastic that we can add their technology to our modeling and simulation. And so I would say that our NWSI and...
What does that stand for?
Naval Warfare Studies
Institute. Thank you for the assist. Phone a friend. Yeah, so we still get used to spitting out the acronyms, but you got Randy Pugh and you've got others that deal with the CRADAs and the research. And it's not just Randy, there's many, but they really know the true value. I just know what it's going to do for the students.
Speaking of, how would you have applied this to your education?
The NVIDIA piece?
Just the partnership with NVIDIA.
Well, I guess it is very applicable. I'll have to admit that I'm a DDM student and I'm a closet financial management wannabe. I would say that having partnerships with those types of companies allow us research opportunities to work on products and solutions for our own communities or the fleet in general. And it exposes you to life outside the military. And it also provides much needed research and intellectual bandwidth applied to a problem that you may not know exists, but you learn about that by working with your industry partner. I know that sounds maybe a little canned, but I think it's a win-win. And I don't think we should have CRADAs with everybody. We need to make sure that the relationship is mutually beneficial and it's not just to have a certain number of. So I think all students, I think most, I'm certain that certain departments would have more interaction with industry than others from experience, since I'm still new on campus. I can't speak from experience.
Sir, from your diverse career, what's your favorite sea story, if you're allowed to tell us?
No, none of this is confidential. I have three, really, and hopefully we have time for them. When I was stationed down in Panama, I was running the airloft, and I was also a senior parachute rigger. So I had my own parachute, but I didn't have a lot of civilian jumps. And there was this commander reserve that would do his drill time down in Panama. And that was when we were in, it was 97 to closed in 99. I was there 94 to 97 after language school. So he said, hey, do you want to jump out of my ultralight? And I'm thinking, this is a commander and I'm an E6. If he says I could do it, I must be able to do it.
The answer is always yes.
So it's lesson. Just because you're a commander doesn't mean you're doing the right thing. So anyway, I was fresh out of static line jump master school in the States. It would be months before I go to free fall jump master, which has a whole different set of calculations when you're jumping out of a plane for where you're going to drift and where you're going to land. So he takes me up as high as that little lawnmower engine will take him. And I'm the only one there. And it's a side-by-side. I'm like doing my distance speed calculations from a static line jump master perspective. So I have him put me out over one of the locks of the canals. And the drop zone is way over there, but I'm like, I'm doing the calculations. This must be right. But in the back of my mind, I wasn't sure. So I roll out of the ultralight and the whole thing flip-flops like that because of my 150 pounds getting out of there. And then he writes his ultralight and he flies off. And I'm falling by myself going, this is weird. Let me pull high just in case I have more time to correct.
Oh, no.
But I was landing so far away from where I wanted to go, and I was over the canal getting ready to go in the drink, I started steering my parachute for army housing. And you don't want to land downwind because it makes for a hard landing, but there was power lines everywhere.
Oh, no.
So I lined my parachute up with the direction of the road, and it was sort of downwind, but luckily I was youthful and I ran it out. But I scooped up my parachute, threw it under my arm. I knew which direction I had to get back to the runway. I had to jump a big concertina wire fence and everything with my parachute. Nothing got torn. I wish I could do that these days. So I get back there and everything's fine. He's like, do you want to do it again? I'm like, no, I don't think I should do that.
Do you want to do it again?
So the next day, actually it wasn't the next day, it was like Monday or something, I got called in the commanding officer's office, the same one that would take me to captain's mass later in life, or already did, I forget. Anyway, he goes, was that you this weekend parachuting over army housing? And I'm like, yes, sir. And he goes, let's not do that again.
You're right. You're right,
yes,
sir.
Yes, sir. So that was that one. And then just in general, every diver, not just SEAL, that here's this next one, probably has similar stories, but I spent a lot of time in a lot of nasty bays at night doing combat swimmer dives. All you have is the light glow of your compass board, and then you're just flying a bearing, you know, a heading and counting your kicks so you can stay on course. And all the luminescence around you is getting stirred up by things that you can't see.
I'm a scuba diver, qualified scuba diver, and I've done one and exactly one night dive in my entire scuba diving career, and I could not handle it. I could not handle not being able to see 360 around me or there being things beyond the light. I can't. I don't know how you did it.
You just press the I believe button. And some people, that probably doesn't affect. I mean, I was fine. Clearly, that was my job forever. But when you see the luminescence go by, you just like tuck your arms in a little tighter, pretend like that didn't happen, or you get bumped. I've been bumped lots. But on one particular dive, our corpsman, he aborted the dive because whether it was a sea lion, something small that didn't kill him, but was able to put his whole mouth around his head.
That's small. That was considered small. Yeah. That was considered small.
Bit into his wetsuit hood. And so he came up, your head is vascular. So he's bleeding really bad, but he's like, I'm out of here. And the safety, the surface craft let him come in. They didn't recall us. It was just luck of the draw, you know?
I could 100% support his reaction.
Yes.
So we still don't know what bit him.
A lot of undersea activity that night, but only one guy got bit.
I'm just thinking about like being in the Arctic and whiteout conditions and polar bears. Like that was something we thought about, but in the dark, in the water, but something all of a sudden glows. So now you know something's over there. Power to all of you.
So the last one is, I like to say that I had an e-ticket ride during RIMPAC 90 on a 688 class submarine off of Pearl Harbor. We were out there doing submarine lock-in and lock-out operations. I was the safety diver, so I had the open circuit scuba, and I was there at the hatch in case something went wrong. And it was actually during daytime, which was good. I've had others at nighttime where I thought I was going to drown, but this is daytime, so I could see everything. But what I wasn't hearing, being the diver underwater, was that the submarine had to go ahead on its racetrack. But I think there's a thing called HUV 4 or something that helps the submarine do only one knot. So it's not too fast for swimmers, surface swimmers. So we can come in and out of the submarine, you know, up the trunk line and then get into the boat and basically do those reps and sets. Well, this time there's a pause. No divers were coming out. And I'm down there, mask, regulator, tank. And then the submarine starts picking up speed because that HUV 4 or whatever it's called was broken and it needed to pick up speed to be able to make the turn. So it's picking up and I felt like it was like shifting gears on me, like first gear, second gear, third gear. I went from having bent arms to straight arms. And then I was looking behind me to see what was going on. And my mask almost got ripped off. And my regulator almost came out. And I went, okay, this turned from being fun, like, woohoo, I'm riding a submarine, to like, I could see all the trunk lines and getting twisted. And I could just picture, if I let go of this thing, I'm going to get tangled in those lines and they're going to find me like hours later. But that didn't come to pass. It was going so fast and I hung on for as long as I could. And I don't know, maybe 4 knots. I don't know how fast that thing was going. Felt faster. But finally, I don't know when I went to muscle failure, but my hands let go. And the speed at which I was traveling, I'm glad I didn't embolize because I just kept breathing. But I was on the surface in like a second. So it launched me to the surface when I let go. I was like on a ride.
Oh my gosh.
And then I got up and I looked around and the skies were kind of darkened. It was daylight, but I couldn't see the safety boat and it was real choppy. I go, well, what do I do now? During the brief, they said, put your hand over your head and wave your arm. Okay, so.
International distress signal.
Yeah, I did that. And then the Zodiac, combat rubber raiding craft, came zipping over to me. They were panicking. It was a Navy diver chief and he thought he lost a diver. And I was an MM2, and he started yelling at me. Why didn't I started yelling at him.
Sure.
I go, you almost drowned me.
Panic attack.
And I go, that skipper, that sub, you know, I was like, you know, we're having like a sea lawyer argument. And I'm just like, get me in the boat. So I didn't know to come up. Nobody told me, nobody recalled me. And he was probably panicking because he knew he did something wrong. Oh yeah. The sub dove while it was speeding up. And it actually started to pull the surface support craft under the water, but we use a pelican hook. So when a boat started getting pulled underwater with a sub, they cut it loose so they could pop up back to the top. And then they went on their search for their diver, who was me. But yeah, I always tell that story. So it was just a great experience since nobody died. So it was a fun ride for a few seconds and then I couldn't hang on. So those are my three stories.
Fair enough. Those are worthy of being retold.
And sir, I just wanted to ask, you're obviously an advocate for education and continued learning. What book are you reading right now or what book would you recommend we pick up?
Cost-benefit analysis with Professor Yushu Shen.
That's a book. That is a book.
Textbooks.
Textbooks at the moment, but I like to Kill Chain. There's so many. I'd like to come back on at a later podcast and I'll have better answers for you. But I'm not doing any reading for pleasure right now.
You know what? I can 100% feel that. I've been there. Fair enough. Well, I appreciate your time, sir. Is there anything, as we wrap up, is there anything that you would like to hit that we haven't hit? Is there a conclusion statement that you would like or any other comment, question, concern that you'd like to express at this moment?
Absolutely. For our listeners, if you see me on campus, please stop, say hello, tell me who you are, where you're from, and what you're studying. I won't promise that I can remember all that the next day, but I'm interested. And I tell you what, I got a lot of satisfaction when I went over to the Foundation House and I saw a bunch of Special Forces guys and spent a lot of time with the various Special Forces groups. So it was nice to sit down and find out which ones they were from and hear about who their bosses were and learn that I served with many of them when they were much lower pay grades and younger. Yeah, I want to engage with the students and I want everybody to not assume that somebody's taking care of something. This is kind of a little administrative note. I've sent out the call to reply to my staff with, say you have broken bathrooms, sinks that don't work, don't suffer in silence. It is not my job. However, we've decided to take on the role of doing the work request if you will bring us the building, the room, and the thing that's wrong. Because even though we're in the midst of a renovation, it doesn't mean that the stuff we're using now shouldn't work. This is a quality of life issue, and we will be the champion if nobody else will. But I am not going to walk around the entire campus because I couldn't see it all. I want to know what the problems are so we can address.
All right. That's perfect. Thank you so much.
You bet.
We understand that you are extremely busy, so we appreciate the time that you've taken out of your extremely busy schedule to come sit down and talk with us. And we hope to do something similar in the future.
Well, thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for joining us in the Trident Room. For more information about today's guests and topics, please visit the show notes online at nps.edu/Trident Room Podcast. The Trident Room podcast has been brought to you by the Naval Postgraduate School Alumni Association and Foundation. For questions, comments, and suggestions, please email us at TridentRoomPodcastHost@nps.edu.